New York, after 20 years of being down in New Orleans, I really have to say, when I first came back here, it was a little, I have to say, a little frightening.
We're going to have to start really? Over yeah. on this
it,
one.
I
apologize.
You know, New York will always be New York, you know.
Of course, yeah. Well, the people make it New York.
Yeah, but what's funniest is that when I was a kid, when you know, living in the street and stuff, I used to sleep on the subway, you know, go to Coney
yeah.
Island and
yeah.
ride back, and it'd be morning time, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, how does it feel to be back?
In Manhattan, well, you know, New York, after 20 years.
We're going to run over on time a little bit, so I do apologize, but we'll do this again.
Back here, it was a little, I have to say, a little frightening.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's changed quite
yeah.
a bit, you know. New York will always be New York, you know.
Of course, yeah. Well, the people make it New York.
Yeah,
yeah.
But what's funniest is that when I was a kid,
yeah, how does it feel to be back? Okay, I apologize. I'm just going to let this thing run and just enjoy.
After 20 years of being down in New Orleans, I really have to say, when I first came back here, it was a little, I have to say, a little frightening.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's changed quite
yeah.
a bit, you know. New York will always be New York. You know.
Of course, yeah. Well, the people make it New York.
Yeah,
yeah.
But what's funniest is that when I was a kid, when you know, living in the street and stuff, I used to sleep on the subway. You know, go to Coney
yeah.
Island and
yeah.
ride back, and it'd be morning time, you know, 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And
can't do that anymore.
and I was going to take Nina to lunch, so. I thought I'd take the subway up there, you know.
Oh.
And I got on the subway, and I was terrified.
You're kidding.
No, I swear to God.
You were terrified?
Well, you know, I started
yeah.
looking around,
yeah.
you know, and nobody looks at each other.
Mm.
And if they do...
be careful.
They look really scary. Yeah, yeah, they really look like psychos, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's
but, too bad. You know, that's, again, you know, it just took a little time to adjust.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
well,
I'm
change.
Back in the village,
yeah.
so
good for you.
It's a little bit of nostalgia.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, have you been down to CBGB's yet?
I don't really want to talk about that
okay.
because, well, yeah,
okay.
can we talk off the record? I don't want to tell you why.
Later.
Oh,
no,
later.
That's
okay.
up to you. That's
we
up
can
to
talk
you.
About it later. Okay.
Yeah, that's up to you. And also, first of all, I want to ask if you've been booked on the Howard Stern show yet.
No, I don't particularly like that man.
Oh, okay, because I can remember a time when you did, yeah.
No, I never liked him.
I thought you loved him.
No, he's a dirty-mouthed American.
Well, the problem I have, if you want to interview me, no, I think he started out great. When he first started out, I loved him. And
everybody
then,
does, don't they?
Yeah, and then he kind of, he just sort of spiraled down into a level that I didn't want to approach, you know.
Well, I find him insulting to women.
Well, he is. I mean,
and,
you know.
Yeah,
but then,
I don't like that.
But some of the women are asking for it, too, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, it's they'll always be idiots.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Anybody who will get, you know, 5 minutes of television
fame,
or radio
yeah,
time,
right.
you know, it's amazing. Television, too, here in America has gotten very bizarre.
Oh, tell me, yeah.
Everything from the paranoia that CNN puts out
yeah.
to the these reality television shows, and the world is all too real now anyway. So, you know, if you're looking for entertainment, I'd rather just walk out on the street and see the crazies.
Well, you're lucky. You get to have that, yeah. I want to talk about Berlin. How was it over there? I have friends who live over there, and they say the music scene over there is hot and throbbing.
It's always been very, very good to me. You know, Berlin is always...
Oh, I loved your live Berlin CD. You know what? I have to say something. I'm talking to you on the phone, you know, because we're recording.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to interrupt. And I just feel like I'm talking to a friend on the telephone. And I don't...
You
mean,
are.
Thank you. And I don't mean to, you know, put in my 2 cents every 2 minutes. So please,
but I will.
Please excuse that. But do talk about Berlin and talk about the music scene.
Yeah. As far as the music street, you know, the street scene, the musicians there, I really don't know because I don't really hang out there. You know what I mean? It's, to me, it's one of the, you know, it's like, it's like the one of the Viennas or the Amsterdams or the Parises or you know, it's the city that you cannot afford to lose.
Oh, I see. Right.
You know, you don't want to lose them, you know. And when we first went over there, I can remember the first gig we played, and it was just crazy. It was great. It was wonderful. And after the show, I said, man, the people were great. And he said, you know what that was? He said, we're so used to bands coming over here. Now, you got to imagine, this is back in the 70s, right? You know, late 70s. And he said, most bands would come out and go, let's rock and roll, you know, and all this kind of cliche stuff. And we didn't. We just went out and, you know, and... just played, you know what I mean, and hope that the ambiance that we would set up, you know, would we would bring our own, and we would bring them into our show instead of us being in their town. We would bring them in our town.
Very good,
You know, so and I think they thought that we were kind of, and I think they still do, think we're somewhat exotic, you know. at the time, that I'm sure they'd never seen anybody with gold teeth and two earrings. Now, you got to imagine, again, this is the late 70s, and nobody wore that stuff.
Yeah, in Berlin.
I got the broken nose to prove it, you know.
You do?
I've had my nose broken about 5 times, you know.
We'll talk about that later, too.
Yeah. Oh, violence. It's always a good subject.
Yeah, well, I love your Live from Berlin CD. That is amazing. And I read your reviews on Amazon about the CD. Do you read your reviews?
No. Hey, Nina.
Yeah.
Did you read the review on Amazon about the Berlin show? Yeah, it's on Amazon. And there's a review on the Berlin show that I didn't know about.
There are a lot of reviews.
There's a lot of reviews. I can hear it clicking away. And
yes, dear.
I'm still from the last century. I
oh, aren't we all, Willie? Gosh.
Oh, man.
But, no, the reviews are wonderful. And people, you know, say that your voice is a little craggier, maybe, than before. But they think that you're getting right down to your very soul, and that your voice has more soul in it and more substance than even before. And
well,
that is
so
beautiful.
Doing those shows, you know, because it gives me a chance where I can be more than just Willie DeVille. I can just.
How can you be more than Willie DeVille?
It's not hard. And lean on the piano, you know, with a drink and smoke a cigarette and just, and do it the way, it's the ambiance thing, you know, it's like taking them into New Orleans.
Yeah.
And just walking in a bar and saying, God, man, the band played that song. Remember that song? Da 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 da. Mm. And then, you know, and I tried to handpick the material so that it would be very interesting because all you got there is just a bass and a piano.
The piano is amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I thought, at first, that's kind of chancy. You know, for people who are used to drums and lead guitars and, you know. But again, we pulled the double whammy and we pulled it off with the ambiance that we created by having a very intimate...
That's what shows, that's what comes through. And that is so great, especially with your voice and your songs.
Well, that's what happens when I just get to just use one instrument, the voice. And I think the voice... to me, is the most important of all instruments. That's the voice that you listen to on records, you know.
Yeah,
that's what pulls you in. It's the tone or the sound, the melody, whether it be, you want to go to antique, whether it be Brenda Lee or whether it be, you know, Elvis or whether it be... whoever, you know, it's the voice. It's the voice. So it gives me a chance just to sing, and it's really nice, you know. I just get to, you know, do what basically I used to do when I was very, very young, which was just, you know, I wanted to be a blues man. Well, now here I am, 55, and I guess I earned that right, you know? I got the scars to prove.
You paid your dues, so now you can do that, No, it is wonderful. And now you have a new DVD coming out.
Yeah.
Your live concert in Amsterdam.
Yeah, it's very special because, again, I instead of just doing another live show.
Yeah.
Just another live show. You know, what I did was I edited in a lot of backstage stuff that happened.
Oh, what fun.
Like, so you really get a feeling of the band.
Yeah.
And there's little interviews with the band, you know.
Yeah.
In between, I would say every third or fourth song, it shoots back to, you know, what goes on the bus, backstage.
I love it.
You know, so it's got... half documentary and half the concert footage.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I wanted to give them a little bit more than just another show.
Yeah.
You know?
That is so good. And who do you have with you? Do you have Seth Farber again?
Let me see. I'm trying to think. No,
on piano?
I can't remember because I've got like three piano players. Seth, I think, is I don't want to say that. I think he's one of the best. He's the one who's on the Berlin show.
Yeah, right.
No, on the Amsterdam show is my old piano player who's great, Kenny Margolis. He plays keys, you know, whether it be piano, organ, or accordion. And I decided to bring him back in because all of a sudden I found I missed some of the Cajun stuff we did and a lot of the Mexican stuff that, you know.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's my own kind of version of what I call urban ranchero.
Sounds like L.A., actually.
Yeah, well, it is. It's Mexican, but urban is, you know, city, country in a way, you know.
That's great.
But, it's got the bodega sound, you know.
Yeah, right.
I can't wait till the next concerts, really, because...
Well, where do you go from here, then?
We're going to start walking. do you know I just got out of the hospital.
I saw that on one of your message boards. You know, your fans send messages back and forth.
Yeah.
And somebody said you're out of the hospital now and you're alive and well.
Yeah.
And what do you want to talk about it? What happened?
being crazy, you know, and all that rock and roll junk. I got this notion that I was immortal.
course.
And God said I wasn't.
Okay.
And he said, you can hurt yourself and I can take you anytime I want. So,
it's something to remember, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, something
yeah.
to remember. So, when I hit that guy head on, I was driving my Dodge Ram that I used to haul the horses in. It was a big truck.
Yeah.
And he had a big truck, too. And we hit each other head
oh,
on.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
oh, really?
So my left knee went into the dashboard, like
oh,
through
man.
The dashboard. Knocked my femur bone, which is your thigh bone,
yeah.
into my hip.
Ooh.
And in between your joints, you have this liquid that makes it movable, right? Well, I slammed it so hard, I broke my shoulder in three places.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, my kneecap, and my femur bone was destroyed. It was like bone to bone, they call it. It's like when that liquid we're just talking about is not there. It's very, very painful. I hope no doctors are listening to me saying. Anyway, so I had to have my hip replaced.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they put a piece of metal in there that looks like a Native American war club in there. It's this metal piece that looks like a microphone, very much like a microphone, and they saw your bone off with one of the things, and then they slide this piece of metal down into the bone, and the ball sticks out, kind of, you know, which is what the femur bone was supposed to do, which is now destroyed. And they flip it around and they jam it in there, and then you have to learn to walk again.
Yeah. Well, for all you medical students out there listening to this, little 5-minute lesson.
It was real scary also not to be able to walk, you know.
Yeah.
And the doctors kept saying, "What's your aspirations in life?" And I'd say, I just want to chase a taxi cab.
Oh,
that's all I want to do, like everybody else does, just chase a taxi cab. And so after 6 weeks, the crutches went, and now I'm just about ready to throw. Well, I always like my canes, you know.
Oh, walking sticks.
Yeah,
right. There you go.
The thing is I never thought I would need it.
Need it, right.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm sick of looking at them right now. So, I'm on both feet and I'm walking great.
Good for you.
And I had a heel and do a lot of physical therapy and that kind of thing. But I bounced back pretty good. I healed, pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Any taxi cabs still safe in New York, or are you chasing them down now?
I'm not chasing them down yet.
Okay.
I will, though.
Yeah.
I will.
This is a warning.
Probably in about 3 weeks I'll be able to chase the taxi. And we don't want to forget the fire engines, too.
Right.
anyway, yeah, I'm doing really, really well with
this.
That's
great.
You know, I don't limp. But, matter of fact, they elongated one of my legs. I smashed it so bad that it was actually about an inch and a half shorter. One leg was shorter than the other.
Wow.
And they added that 2 inches on.
Well, that was nice of them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nice of them. And so now I'm all evened out, and I'm the bionic blues singer, I guess, you know. my spirits are good. I feel good, you know.
That's the main thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful to get outside now, you know. I have a whole different appreciation.
You start appreciating,
Just walking. Man, people don't realize it's like, you know, to just get up and walk across the room anytime you want, you know, is so special and so wonderful, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do
that's
it. So
scary.
It went from, you know, bad to worse. To the next step was going to be my spine was going to be out of whack.
No.
which they say if your back is gone, you know, is shot,
yeah, right,
then you're really screwed, you know. So Nina and I decided, hey, man, we've got to get this done.
Yeah.
And I was going, I'm afraid. Which I was.
Of course.
You know. So, yeah, I could hear them buzzing, you know. And so I finally got the cojones up to go in and do it, and I did it.
Great. Yeah,
they say I gave them hell on the board, you know, on the table.
Well.
I was trying to pull my catheters out, my needles, you know.
God. I think everybody does that.
The lady was saying, it's okay, Willie, it's okay, you're all right, you know, relax.
Oh, yeah.
You know. Now, relax. You've got a guy who... it's got one of your cheeks, and he's cut it in half.
Okay. Oh, really?
I swear.
Oh.
And then they have to reach in there, and they have to cut the bone in half, and then they put a metal hip in.
Gosh.
So there you have it.
Okay. Okay, medical students, I hope you were taking notes.
Oh, God.
Also, I want to talk about New Orleans. You went back to New Orleans?
No, there's nothing I could
Katrina.
Do. I'll tell you. You know, when it first came over the television, you know, we were sitting here and we were having dinner or something, lunch, and I don't know. All of a sudden, that came on, and you know, when I was down there, it was always next year.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. The hurricane's not going to. It didn't come last year. So it's not gonna, you know. And finally, it came. It hit.
The money,
you know, that would always go into beer for Mardi Gras, or they'd figure some way of burying it, you know. And that's off the record, you know. But the thing is that it finally happened.
Yeah.
I was in the one that was, I guess, about 10 years ago.
Oh.
And it was scary, man, to see a big oak tree, you know, the big old oak trees, split right in half by lightning.
God. Yeah.
And you know when you see them in the movies, like people walking, you know, on an angle, and you think, oh, that can't be, and it is true.
Yeah.
You know, it's you have to walk on an angle or else you'll get blown away.
Right.
You know, it's incredible.
Well,
so
how is
I
your
sat re- here.
Oh, sorry,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I sat here and I cried.
Yeah,
I just cried. All my friends were out in the street. They were all, nobody had a home. We felt so guilty that we had a roof over our head.
Yeah.
And we're tuned into the boob tube.
Yeah.
And a warm bed. And these people went to sleep one night and woke up in 4 feet of water.
Yeah. I think we all experienced that. I know I felt guilty just taking another sip of my Diet Coke while I was sitting in front of the TV watching it.
Yeah, so we
feel
didn't know
so helpless.
What to do. We didn't.
Yeah,
yeah, you're helpless.
Yeah.
Exactly, you feel helpless.
And yeah, how was your recording studio in New Orleans? Did that survive?
Well, I, you know, I recorded in a lot of places.
I thought you had your own.
No, I'm not that technical. When I get that technical, shoot me.
Don't say that. You just might.
No, I just music is really my thing, and those electronic things, they kind of confuse me. I'm not really...
Well, what about
I have trouble just plugging my amplifier in, you know?
No, don't say that.
Really,
DeVille, having trouble plugging his amplifier in?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go along with that. What about your beautiful home in New Orleans?
That's under 4 feet of water. It's like, you know, it's the old plantation is, buried in water, you know, and it must be quite a sight. But anyway, the thing is that it was like kind of, I almost felt like bad luck was following me.
I think a lot of people felt that way.
Like for instance, like me and Nina were in New Mexico when 9/11 happened.
Oh, gosh.
Now, without a cigarette and without a cup of coffee,
oh, gosh,
she had the courage to come upstairs and say, Willie, you got to wake up. you won't believe what's happening on TV. Yeah. The World Trade Center just got hit by an airplane. Then it got hit by another one, the other World Trade Center. And now they're going after. We're under siege, basically.
Mm.
You know, we're at war.
Yeah.
And I went downstairs and I couldn't believe my eyes.
Yeah, I know.
And what they were showing, what little bit they were showing, was so terrifying, so apocalyptic.
I know.
You know, really, really, really scary that I was glad we weren't here because Nina, Nina would have been out there with water and coffee and, you know, and probably drinks for everybody, you know, and just trying to, you know, because she's like that, you know, and I would have had to nail the door shut and, you know, say, no, let them do their gig out there, the firemen and everything. And if you see the films, people jumping out of windows together.
I know.
It's a heartbreaker.
Yeah,
it's just a goddamn heartbreaker. And then my second home washed away.
Yeah.
It hasn't been a good start of this century. Now, I never felt comfortable in the last one, but this one, this is bizarre.
Let's hope that was the worst and we're getting that out of the way. Let's go back to your music, Willie.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, let's talk about
enough of this apocalyptic dream.
Let's not try to solve the world problems just yet.
No.
Yeah. But I want to give the listeners a little bit of background that I didn't know, that when you started the Mink DeVille Band, you actually went to London to get into the punk scene, and that didn't work out?
Let's not blow this out of proportion. What it was I was 21.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, with the pompadour and my long long leather coat and my red snakeskin shoes and my Gibson guitar, I figured I'd go to London where they don't have blues men.
Yeah.
All 21 years of me, of experience. and I was right. I was right. They were, you know, I used to play myself acoustically, just, you know, play Delta blues stuff with Bottleneck, you know.
Yeah.
And then I ran out of money and I got thrown out of the country and I came back here. And then I went to San Francisco where the Oakland blues scene, Johnny Hooker was living out there. My old drummer, Manfred, he lived out there. And they were all telling me, come on out here, man. Hooker lives out here. And, you know, there's Luther Allison lives out here. There's a whole lot of blues guys who live out here. Come out here. So I said, Jesus, I'm going. So, you know, if they've got clubs to play, let's do it. So I went out to San Francisco and started playing, you know. And, of course, you know, you come to the point where, well, we got to have a name for the band. I'm sick of being this and that and, you know, whatever. So Mink DeVille arose. And
just like that?
Yeah.
That's great.
And then I conned the bass player and the drummer as that I knew the ropes back in New York. And I know everybody back in New York. And they believed me.
Yeah, well, you have that persona that you do, you know.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I got back here and we moved into the Lower East Side. You know, and it was on 3rd Street, right around the corner from CBGB's, and we just started working there, you know, just working and working. And it went on like a system where, like, how much you drew, you know, how many people you draw in was how much you played.
Right.
And, you know, we were doing, like, kind of like James Brown Live at the Apollo type of thing.
Yeah.
And all the rest of the bands, to me, and I don't mean to be cruel, and I don't want to be cruel, but those bands couldn't play.
Yeah, I know. No, I know what you mean. You're
you
right.
know, they all sound the same. They all go.
They have that formula, and they.
Yeah,
that's it.
Formula. I hate that word. You know, and because for an artist, you have to stretch.
Yeah.
You always have to stretch and do something different, which gets hard, you know, yeah. because, you know, for guys like, I don't know, I hope I'm part of the elite men's club, such as Tom Waits, Ry Cooder, myself,
yeah,
Van Morrison, Dylan's out there, you know.
Yeah.
And we're always looking for eclectic music to give the public whatever. Every country has its own soul,
yeah.
you know. And so, you know, if you take that and you take it and you put it with something that you wouldn't think would really work, but it does.
It works. Right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And those are the best things, are the mistakes that work.
Yeah.
So, you know...
You can't take a chance, take a risk.
Yeah, you gotta.
Yeah.
You always have to, you know.
Yeah.
And this, actually, this last album, I think, is one of the best records I've ever done.
Oh, my gosh.
I love this record.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
and when is that going to be out? Is there a release
Crow
date?
Crow Jane Alley?
Pardon me?
You have not heard of Crow Jane Alley? It's because it's been out.
Oh, you're talking about that one. I thought you were talking about the Amsterdam.
Yeah, no, not the Amsterdam
okay.
one. No, this is a studio record.
I can't get that one.
You can't get that?
Right, I have tried. And it's not available.
I'll tell you what. You call right now when you get off the phone with me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the phone with Nina, and she'll give you two guns. And she'll tell you
the one-way ticket to New York, right?
Yeah. And it's your regular record company jive. You know,
right.
I'm the artist, they're the business people.
Speaking of that, I don't mean to interrupt again. I always say that.
No, it's
but,
okay.
Do you want to talk about A&M Records at all, speaking of the music business?
A&M?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't even remember when I was with them, but I don't...
Your publishing, I think, was with them. And you
I
did
don't
a Mark Knopfler. You did
That was on A&M? Was the Miracle Records?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You
Which they didn't
every
push.
Day.
Yeah.
Well, that goes to show you how much I pay attention to the business.
Well, ignorance is bliss, I guess, because I was very upset that they didn't push or promote that
CD. You know, that was I got one thing very, very good out of that, which was for a musician is quite a coup, which was I was nominated for an Academy Award.
Wasn't that beautiful?
That's not bad for a musician, you
Storybook
know?
Love. I play that every Friday on I have a half-hour show on films and television.
Oh, good. And, I was wondering where those checks were coming from.
From me, no. And I play that as a theme song when we go into Real Talking, and I always say that's your Storybook Love from Princess Bride.
Nice. That's very nice.
It's a beautiful song, and the more I hear it, the more I hear your soul coming out of that. I mean, you are amazing as far as,
you know,
a lot of artists you can hear for the first time, you go, oh, I love that guy, he's great. And then after a while, you get kind of tired and think, what was I thinking? But you just go on and on. I mean, you get better and better, even with the same songs.
Well, I don't know. The thing is that I feel you better get better. You know what I mean?
Well, inside of you.
If you're gonna sing, like when I write a song, for instance, you know, the song, there's very few of them that I wouldn't be able to sing at 60. Now, I don't know if I could sing Little Girl at 60
or 70. That might be a problem.
But I can tell you and I can guarantee you one thing. I will not be jumping around the stage in leotards.
You know who else said that?
Who?
Mick Jagger.
Oh, yeah? Well, he's still wearing leotards, so what can I tell you?
And there's a...
You blew it for me because I was going to say, and don't tell anybody I said it about, and you already did.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry about
it.
Mick is kind of hard-headed, so I'm sure it'll slip by him.
You know what song he does that I love is Back of My Hand. Have you heard that with all the guitar work that goes on behind that?
No.
It is really beautiful. It's like old blues. And it
it's something I'd like to give him.
With the back of your hand?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Moving right along.
Moving right along. No, we've never had a love for each other. I got to say that. We just don't. I think it was because my first producer was one of his first producers.
Oh,
and my first producer was an American, and he used to dangle me in front of him like a carrot.
Oh,
like,
This
is the real thing.
Oh.
Willie is a real American rhythm and blues singer. Try to beat that one, man.
Oh.
And, you know, do stuff like that to him, which is quite cruel, you
well,
know.
Well, he's right, but it isn't fair to use you to dangle.
Yeah. Well, that was Jack, you know.
Yeah. Is that Jack Nitzsche who did that?
Yeah. Jack was quite a character.
I
miss him dearly. You know, as we were saying before, with this century, I lost so many people in my life, you know. My mother, my father, my best friend Jack, you know, my best friend Rick. And it would all happen it seemed like 8 months.
God.
You know, just it was like God slapping me in the face, you know, wake up. And then I got in the accident.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a wake-up call.
Yeah.
You can walk the edge, but you better know where the edge is.
Oh, good. God, that's a great quote.
Oh, that's good. it kind of all of a sudden put the fear of God in me, man.
Yeah.
It's like you can die, you can get taken, and I want to do more shows, and I want to, you know, there's so much more I want to do. I want to produce records.
Oh, that would be great.
Yes, I would love to produce
records. That's what I love about.
So if there's any bands out there that have great singers, my book is open.
I have a guy. I discovered this guy in... he's living in Mill Valley, and he's a great blues man. His name is Marcus James, and he was a
That name sounds
he was a percussionist, and he went to, I interviewed him, and he went to Africa with a percussion friend, and he was a blues man, and he, you know, got into the Afro-pop culture, and they started playing, and, you know, and he was having a great time, and then these musicians came down with their stringed instruments.
Yeah.
Sounding like these beautiful string guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it just blew him away. And he's got two CDs out that are wonderful. Calabash Blues and Nightbird.
And well, you know, it's funny you say this because, you know, if you talk about things go out in the air and other people pick them up.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very odd, and I've got a couple of things that can prove this. But the thing is, I always want, you know, when that techno stuff was coming out?
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
It was driving me nuts. I shouldn't be so critical. As young people, I
should
let them like it.
You're the musician. Be critical, Willie.
Huh?
You're the musician. Be critical. That's what we need.
Yeah, but nobody wants to hear negative things, you know. And
well, it's just your opinion.
I can get real heady and real... snotty and real, just, you know, judgmental, and it's much hipper to hear somebody say something nice about somebody. It's just simply why. Are you familiar with the song "You'll Never Know" that I did with Brenda Lee?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the point that she opens the song up. It's her voice first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to do things like that. You should do things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're any good, when your voice comes in, people go, wow, you know.
Yeah.
The point being, it's just kind of like I wanted to go to Africa and learn the sacred rhythms.
Yeah.
And I also, now this is off the record, promise me.
Okay, Willie, we promise. You know, it's so hard to his music is so great, and what he's saying is so great. And so how do you interrupt one for the other? But I think I found my cue. So let's, we'll go right along with some more music. This is from Crow Jane Alley.
I left a note on your pillow, with a handprint on your window pane, calling you just to hear your voice. I knew then I didn't have a choice. Here I am, baby, on the downside of town, stuck here such a long, long time, hanging on the telephone line. Please answer me now so I can say that I will never, ever hurt you again. Here I am, baby, on the downside of town. Things and I took my guns, crawled out the window, and I started to run.
You know, drinking a glass of wine, smoking a cigarette, and shouting the blues, it really shows your colors, you know. It's showing the bare minimal, you know. And if he's that good, just the way he is, just, you know, standing on the street corner saying, God, if you put a couple electric guitars with this kid, he could be good.
Yeah.
He could be big. He could get a record contract, maybe.
Well, he's got an independent label.
Huh?
He has an independent label.
I have an indie. I got an indie, yeah. Well, you know, you have two choices here. You can either go with the biggies and be very careful because you can get shuffled under the rug. Or get an independent
Got control.
And gamble
right.
on that they
yeah.
love records. To yeah. me, if you work for a record company and you don't absolutely love records, you should go sell cars.
And how many people are in the industry who don't know music?
Yeah, exactly. I think they have their ears surgically removed before you can work for this record company.
I know.
You must have your ears surgically removed. Well, I always put it this way. If you were, you know, going to get married and you went down to the bank to get a loan for the house.
Yeah.
And you got your loan and you're back at the house, and after a year your marriage falls apart, does the bank care?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Well, and
so,
the same thing with the record label. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and are you going to give up on love? No.
No.
So, you just have to keep rolling with the punches.
Right.
You know, and they're not going to get rid of me.
Well, they haven't.
You know,
you're alive and
years.
Throbbing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
after
they have.
After 27
haven't.
Years, I'm still here and I'm still rare and go.
Well,
know?
Is there any. Oh, I wanted to ask you something. Are you doing any film work?
Any film work?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it's funny. I was talking about that the other day. Rourke called me.
I was just going to say, Mickey Rourke is making such a great comeback.
Yeah, he is. He's behaving himself.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
I'm disappointed.
I had a talk with him, and he said to me, what are you doing, Mick? You know, like, one thing I hear, you're chasing this chick all over the place, and, you know, and you really got your payback. Anyway, I'm getting coffee in the other room, and I'm airing somebody's dirty laundry, but it's not that way. There's a good end to the story.
Okay.
And he said, Willie, I just want to work. You know, I just want, you know, I had so many chances, and, you know, and I screwed up with my cocky attitude.
Yeah.
And we all had it. We all had that. You know, you think you're the greatest thing that came down the highway, you know.
Yeah.
And you gotta kind of, you know, really, I hate to put a pin in the balloon, but we are not really public property. We are just human beings.
Exactly.
You know, and I think the more human you are, I think people like you more.
Yeah, sure. Well, did you see Mickey's Sin City?
Yeah, I didn't particularly like it. It was a little too cartoony.
Well, it was supposed to be.
Yeah, it was definitely.
But I like their use of it, like the colors.
Yeah. But
and he was great.
I've been seeing it that effect in a few different movies now.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling in a couple of years you're going to be so sick of it.
Yeah, I know.
I still like the old-fashioned, you know, Tennessee Williams stuff, dialogue. You know, I'm not that crazy into computer graphics and all that stuff. You know, to me, Streetcar Named Desire is just as good today as it was then, you know. Or The Rose Tattoo. I keep naming Tennessee Williams stuff. But anyway, it's because of the dialogue.
Yeah.
And they're brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
They're just brilliant. And and he didn't need... Look at Jean Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
It was all done with, like, you know, Chinese paper lanterns and you know, things to shoot through like that to give it an ambiance, you know. And it gave it an atmosphere. She's mine.
She will love. Again, that's all.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you, Willie, and I hope I'll be talking to you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye to Nina.
Okay. Bye, Nina. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Bye. My forever came today. My forever came today.
My forever, my forever,
my forever came today.
Oh, that's made my day. And there's still more on the CD. This is such a great CD, and it does go back to the Ming DeVille days, and the music sounds so good. I wanted to, we did get, again, on the recording, A Lot Was Lost in the Goodbye, when we were saying goodbye, and he did say, and this is very personal for me, he did say, call anytime, and I love that. And I wanted to get that on the CD, but it didn't happen. And then I also thanked him for being so generous with his time, and I said how special this was to me, and this one goes in the scrapbook for my grandchildren. And he said, oh, how sweet. And that's what I love about Willie. I mean, he saw all facets of Willie DeVille, you know, the sensitive, the real deal, the real guy. And I just have a little story. I don't know if I have time on I'm just buzzed by clocks and times here. When he talked about Mickey Rourke, he asked me if I knew how they met, and I did hear the story that they met in a hotel lobby, and Mickey Rourke and his lady were walking down one way, and Willie and his lady were walking the other way, and they both are fans of each other. And Willie felt a tap on his shoulder, and it was... Mickey Rourke's lady saying, I guess it was his wife, and she was saying, my husband is so shy, and he's such a big fan of yours. Could you just come over and say hello to him? And Willie was thrilled because he was such a fan of Mickey's, and so they went over and they had a great conversation, and it happened to be Mickey Rourke's birthday, and he invited Willie and his lady up to his hotel suite, and he had a great birthday party, and they became fast friends. And Mickey put him in the film Greenwich Village, the Pope of Greenwich Village, where you can see Willie playing his accordion with his band and everything. And it was just so charming. And Willie said that Mickey is so shy, and he has a very soft, soft speaking voice. And he said it was just, the moment to meet Mickey Rourke and to meet such a nice person. So there you have it, guys. And I'm sorry for making the mistake that I made. What happened was, being that this is an interview, it goes into the CD player as one track. And, instead of being able to fast forward to the next track. And so that's what happened at the beginning. But I hope you enjoyed it. And it will belong to the station. So if you missed this, you can call the station at 534-1200 and say you want to hear it again. And so I'm going to play some more music while I take a break.
Outside the dark hotel room, the taxis flash their lights. Garbage trucks wake you up at dawn. They turn off the neon signs. The bar's been closed for hours. The minibar's been stolen too. They took all the fire alarms off every wall, and they say help will be here soon. I'd go to the drugstore for you, but I'm afraid to go outside and take a walk down that corridor they call carpet's moldy. In the bathroom hangs a robe. In the lobby's a plaque to the poets and broke down painters with no hope. Drinking rusty water. And I wait with you to fall. Don't ask me to take that walk down Crojean Alley at all. I'd go to the drugstore for you, but I'm afraid to go outside. Down that corridor they go, Crojean Alley.